Hi there, welcome to Clan Chat Online for our usual Friday night catch-up with a former player. Now, it doesn't look Friday night where as you're watching us right now. That's because it's Wednesday and it's lunchtime. As ever, we'll do the introductions in just a second, but we want to extend our congratulations to our regular guest, Mr. Clan himself, Matt Haywood, and his wife Jenny on the birth of their daughter, Madison, or Maddie for short, and a little sister for Charlie. She looks an absolute belter. Anyway, Matt's taken some time out, and rightfully so, to spend time with his beautiful family. And for that, on behalf of everyone at the Clan, we send the Haywoods our very best wishes. So, we've had a look down the bench, and we're giving some much-needed ice time to the voice of the Clan himself in the bottom left-hand corner, Mr. Kevin McCoskrey, who makes his debut. Kevin, welcome to the show. We know you're very much a man of leisure these days, now that you're retired. So, have you been occupying your time in these last few months?
Well, kind of weirdly, like everybody else, I guess, doing things that I didn't expect I would be doing. But, you know, lots of projects on the go and moving house shortly and getting ready for that. So, lots to keep me busy, but still missing the hockey.
Absolutely. So what does an announcer do when there's no ice hockey team? Have you got to the point where you're announcing your wife into the room yet? Is that the stage we're at yet?
I think that might be a concept that wouldn't last too long, Craig. I think I would get slapped down pretty quick if I started that. But no, I'm sure it'll all come back to me when we do get the mic back in the hand. But for the moment, the announcing voice is getting a well-earned rest.
Absolutely. Well, if it helps, I was commentating my daughter on her bike the other day, so got to keep your hand in somehow, don't you? Great to have you on board, Kevin. Thanks for coming on. Also with us to complete the triumvirate of the Clan After Battle podcast. Remember those? Business development manager and resident of Burniston. Also has a penchant for policemen. Sorry, that should be playing policemen. It's Jerry McLaughlin. How's your week been, Jerry?
You've got to be careful there, Craig. You're spreading some rumours. It's fake news you're spreading there. That was pretty dangerous. Yeah, all good. So obviously, everyone's still recoiling from the news of what's going on with the NHL and hockey. But obviously, we've had bigger news in terms of the country as well. And I think it's just kind of showing that, like, we won't be the only league, the only sport that's having to make, you know, plans for COVID. But we've still got a lot of stuff going on at the Clan. So there'll be lots of events and things being announced with whatever we can do very, very soon.
Excellent. So, our special guest this week, top left-hand corner, a man who wore the number 4 jersey for 3 seasons between 2011 and 2014. Thankfully, no Zach Sullivan's here to correct me. He played 180 games, scored just 1 goal and 13 assists, 190 penalty minutes in his time with the club. Thanks to RNJ Stats for that. And very much fondly remembered. Now the player coach at Leeds Chiefs, as you can see in the background, is Sam Zajac. Sammy, thanks for coming on this week. How's the recruitment been going for the Chiefs this summer?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Craig. It's it's been a really successful summer in terms of recruitment. I think we've made some really good young, talented signings here, and obviously now it's just a case of waiting until we can get them all together and get on the ice and get going again.
Excellent. Now, I mentioned the one goal that you scored for the Clan. I don't know if you'll remember it, Sammy, but I'll certainly put it to Jerry and Kevin. And we all know I like a Clan conundrum. Can you remember who it was against, your one goal for the club?
I can, yeah. I think it was Dundee.
There we go.
I think, a bit more trivia, I'm pretty sure it was Drew Miller's first Clan point as well, so we'll give him all the credit for that one.
There you go.
Was it from the point? Sammy,
I think I got a little bit lost and came in probably top of circles, which didn't happen often.
Well, there we go. We'll find out more about your preparations.
You still there, Craig? I think you froze. You actually stunned Craig with
the Yeah, just to warn you, the internet's not the best here, just to warn you of that. So we'll try and get through that as best we can. Sam, we'll find out more about your preparations for the NIHL a little later, but your time at the Clan was a good one. I know you enjoyed your time up here. What made Brayhead Clan as it was so special for you?
Yeah, I loved my time up in Brayhead in Glasgow. I think, you know, there was a lot of different areas that were great. I think the city's phenomenal, especially coming from where I do in Newcastle. It's a really similar kind of a vibe, I think, probably just on a little bit of a bigger scale. So, you know, I really enjoyed the area living there, played with some great players, met some wonderful people who we still keep in touch with today. And obviously, I think being a part of, you know, the Clan and watching them grow from the early days, it was the second season when I did join, and see where they kind of ended up by the time I left was something really special, and it has a lot of fond memories.
Kevin, when you think back to Sam's time at the club, what do you remember about, what memories stick out for you from Sam's 3 years with the club?
Well, what I always loved about watching Sam was, I think everybody was the same. He never backed down from anybody. I remember him, you know, facing up against some of the guys in the league that were sort of renowned fighters, particularly Guy Lapine. I remember one night, he kind of had a bit of a tangle with him. And it was always the height difference that seemed to make Sammy stand out in those kind of confrontations. And I think, you know, a fight always lifts the crowd and maybe lifts the teammates, lifts the bench, energises the game. But when Sam got involved, I think because there was always that kind of anticipated underdog thing, sort of David versus Goliath, and Sam always acquitted himself really well. So Sam is always an exciting player to watch. Good movement on the ice, good transition, but always willing to get stuck in and willing to get involved. But, you know, I think you were, Sammy, involved in a really interesting time for the club, because the season you came in, which was our second season, we were kind of consolidating on a really good start under Bruce Richardson and sort of finished mid-table. And then it went from that to season three being probably the season to forget for most Clan fans. You know, there was lots of turnover of players. There was a kind of slow start to the season. I remember Jade Galbraith arrived really late and it took ages to kind of get going. And then there was coaching changes midway through with Jordan and Paul Gardner then coming in. That season was a real kind of topsy-turvy season. And then that led into season four, which was your last year, unfortunately, Sam. But that was probably the season that a lot of fans look back on with a lot of fun memories, because we had the first season under Ryan Finnerty and the only season in the club's history where we got to the playoff weekend. So that must have been a great way to sort of end your spell at Clan.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was definitely one of the fondest memories I think I have with the club. And, you know, it's a great part, a great weekend to be a part of. It's a great experience. And, you know, we lost there in the semi-final. I think it was a one-goal game, and, you know, we acquitted ourselves well, and you saw the numbers that the fans travelled down in. And, yeah, it was really special. And I think for me, at the end of that season, it was kind of time for me to drop down, and I wanted to play a bigger part in the team and, you know, take on a bigger role. And I think the way that season ended with such a special game to finish with, I think was probably the right time and a good time to kind of bookmark my time there with the Clan.
And Jerry, I was going to say, Jerry, I can't remember if you were involved with the club at the time or you were still just a fan at that point, but just what were your own recollections of Sammy in a purple jersey?
Yeah, I was just coming as a fan at the time. I remember, a lot of people know I was a Manchester Storm fan when I was living in Manchester, and was delighted that there was hockey. I was still at the point I was trying to persuade my wife to come with me to watch Clan games then, so I was coming on my own. Watching Sammy that year. And there's something I'd always actually wanted to ask you, actually. When you look at that team, at those teams, and when Kev recounts those particular seasons, there's a lot of talent in those teams as well. A lot of people's favourite Clan players are from that era as well. You know, Ed McGrain and Ash Goldie, you mentioned Jay Gilbraith, Jordan Kristanovich and stuff. And so much happened in those 3 years in terms of turnover of coach, in terms of those players, in terms of the playoff finals. How much did those 3 years, how much have they impacted you in your career as now in management? Has a lot of that experience come from that compact 3 years?
I think so, yeah. I mean, with regards to players, I think some of the talent we had on those rosters, you know, guys even that maybe get forgotten about a little bit, like you mentioned Ed McGrain, and I think he was probably underrated, one of the best players that I've seen up close. And, you know, not just that, but a great guy as well. And again, guys like, you know, Ash Goldie, Scott Arson, these are guys that we still keep in touch with today, and, you know, phenomenal people, and they did great things, obviously, with the Clan and elsewhere in their hockey careers. But yeah, I think the things that you take from the different coaches at the time, I think Drew Bannister was probably one of the most professional people that I've met in hockey. You know, he'd probably forgotten more than most people ever know about the game, and the way he approached every practice and every game, it was definitely something that you tried to emulate. And And then total flip side from that, you get guys like Paul Gardner, who for someone who's been so successful, he was so relaxed and laid back and a real kind of man management based guy. And yeah, I think, you know, and again, Finner as well, he's another guy who, you know, his man management's great, and you see what he's gone on to do within the league now. And yeah, I think you try and take little nuggets from all these guys and things that you think maybe work well for you and for your teammates and look back at that and think that's something you want to try and implement in your own team.
And do you combine that with your own playing style? Because obviously, Craig, the original question you asked me was what I remember about Sammy as a player or not. And obviously, we do remember that kind of resilience and that kind of standing up for the team is something that fans love. That's something that all fans take to, and it's... And there's been times where teams, not just clan teams, but elite league teams, have had fantastic players and fantastic. But there's that kind of spirit whereby you don't want to be bossed around in your own barn, and that's what fans want first and foremost. They want people to want the team to win and to defend the team's honour, essentially. And that's something that you always had in spades. Is that something you've combined with those guys as a manager into your management style? Have you been able to do that? Can you do that?
It is definitely something that I think I've focused on the last season, and again going forward, it's something that we'll try and focus on. And for me, as a player, I think the least you can ask of a player is, you know, to give their all. And you know, there might be more skilled guys out there, and there might be more talent out there, but I think there's the minimum you should be providing, I think, is, you know, 100% effort, 100% commitment. And again, it's such a physical sport that I think it maybe gets lost how much that can affect the game. And, you know, that kind of never say die attitude. I know last season we had a lot of adversity, and that was something we really tried to instill in the players and the core of players that we brought back this year. You know, we wanted to get that identity into them early, that, you know, we're going to be a team that's tough to play against every night. And there might be teams with more skilled and talented rosters than we are, but we wanted to be a team that was always difficult to play against, and the team that... opponents knew they'd been in a game against us. You know, it wasn't going to be an easy 60 minutes for them. And I think that's going forward something that we're really trying to nail down here, is to keep that identity and keep that core of guys who are a bit of a nightmare to play against, and kind of build as we go.
It's great because the name suits that as well. And I think clan fans often feel like we have a lot of adversity to get over. Like, we get kicked out of our rink by Mickey Mouse for a month. We have not the biggest budget in the league. But like, even the name, the Leeds Chiefs, I guess the suggestions there and the Chiefs and that kind of ideology around the name Chiefs in hockey as well, like that is the package. Has that always been the case then, do you think, all the way?
Yeah, I think there's probably been some comparisons, obviously, with the famous Gloucester Chiefs, you know, the colour theme similar. And obviously we've got the name there. And I think towards the back end of last season, when we started, you know, when the building got finished here and we started getting the home crowd in, they definitely responded to that physical side. There was a game we had against Bracknell where there was a couple of fights, and I think it really got the fans out of their seat. And, you know, not necessarily fighting, because I think that probably is starting to find its way out of the game a little bit, rightly or wrongly. But I think just, you know, having a physical presence and kind of having that work rate and that desire, it's really something a lot of fans of this sport really buy into.
Now, let's take you all the way back to the very start, Sam. You arrived at the Clan in 2011, as I said. You'd played for a season with Newcastle Vipers, very much a local club for you. But it was a tough season. Obviously, the club went out of business by the end of the season. You worked with Gareth Chalmers back then. Gareth was heavily involved with the Vipers back then. Tell us about that season and the difficulties that there were throughout the course of the season. You were working, Danny Stewart was your coach as well at that time.
Yeah, I spoke to Danny quite a few times over the course of last season, and it kind of mirrored his first head coaching job in Newcastle. I think what we went through here last year with all the adversity. So he was kind of a great guy that you could lean on and get the experiences, you know, that he'd been through, and kind of get that advice of the best way to go about things. But I think for me as a player that year, you almost didn't see the off-ice stuff, you know, as much as you would have with the role that I'm in now. I think for me it was... The rink was 10 minutes up the road. It was a team that I'd watched as a kid, and there was some people on the team that I'd grown up playing with. So it was great for me. You know, it was my first experience in the Elite League, and the way it worked out, you know, we lost a lot of players, and we were shorthanded towards the end of the season there for quite a while. And for me, it really kind of put me in that shop window and gave me that ice time that's tough to come by, I think, in the Elite League for these young British guys. So for me, I mean, for the club as a whole, it was probably a bit of a negative experience. But for me, it was great timing, and it was probably just what I needed to kind of push on and make, you know, convince myself I could play at that level, and obviously convince Bruce Richardson eventually that I'd be a good fit for up in Brayhead. So yeah, you could probably write a book about that season looking back. But I think on the whole, you know, it's fondly remembered by me, and it was kind of something I had to go through to prove to myself that I was capable of playing that level.
Craig, you are writing a book, aren't you, about that? I saw that reaction in your face there. You're like, don't let the secret out.
Well, yeah, I didn't keep a diary. I think I've forgotten most of the stories from back then.
But as you mentioned, it was Bruce that signed you for the Clan. But Bruce moved on. He took an opportunity back in Canada. Drew came in. Now, you've already spoken about how well you worked under Drew Bannister. But was there that little bit of uncertainty when a new coach comes in thinking, oh, this guy not might fancy me? What was that like for you back then?
Yeah, there was a little bit. You know, I remember having a few conversations with Bruce and where he saw me fitting into the lineup. And obviously, you've got to remember back then, I think it was a 10 import limit rather than 14. So, you know, you're probably going to be playing a few more minutes as a young British guy than guys coming through would these days. So, yeah, there was that little bit of uncertainty when you saw that he'd moved on. But I remember playing against Drew when he was down in Hull the year before. And, you know, he was a real standout player in the league. And and yeah, it worked out well. You know, as I said earlier, he was such a kind of consummate professional that I think he demanded the best from guys, and he kind of really pursued excellence. And I think, you know, looking back at that team, I think everyone probably really enjoyed working under Drew. So yeah, it definitely worked out. And having a guy come in who was, you know, a defenseman, which is obviously a position that I play, and someone who'd played at the highest level in that position, it was a really good opportunity to learn from him.
Now, Kevin, you've already spoke about your memories of Sam. When you think back, what was it about him that the fans took to? Was it that combative style? Was it just the way he played? What was it that the Purple Army really got behind, do you think?
I think primarily it was that, Craig. I think it was the you know, the never say die and fairly physical aspect to his game. But apart from that, he was a great personality. You know, I have this thing these days about a lot of hockey teams are almost like 20 robots out there, you know, all the same size, all the same sort of build. Very difficult, you know, to pick players out if you can't see the numbers on their back, because we go for this very similar athletic sort of model of an ice hockey player these days. But I love to see real contrasts in a team, you know, big guys, little guys, where you can actually establish a bit of personality within the team. And I think Sammy brought personality at a time when the team is fairly new and trying to build its identity. I think guys like Sam are really important. And I think just in terms of the growth of the club and you know, building a fan base, Sam was very popular, great guy at social events, etc. And the fans really identified with him. I think he was a very important part of those initial you know, early Clan teams.
Now, I think with Drew's team, we came so close to the playoffs that year. Nottingham beat us in the quarter-final, an overtime winner by Brandon Benedict, which cost me a fortune in work, but we'll not go into that. I'm not still bitter about it 8 years on.
Just write that book, Craig. Just write that book. Get over it. It's fine. You'll make it up.
And ultimately, I had the last laugh. No. I mean, losing overtime, just that game in particular, I think so much heartache, so much had gone into the season, Sam. When you look back, and I think we wondered it with Bruce with his first season there. Drew stayed for only a year. Are we left to wonder sometimes, I'll go with you on with this one, Jerry, are we left to wonder what could have been with these guys, given that how well they built the team up, the players they had, and they never got the chance to, or they didn't take the chance to build on it?
Yeah, I think it's a big thing, and it'd be interesting to see what Sammy thinks as well, but what Kev was touching on there, where like, the club was really in its infancy, and in many ways, you know, still is to some degree, and you're trying to build a culture there, and without the kind of culture, without a bedrock of what that club is, and what it means, there's going to be a lot of shift in the movement, and that ultimately has an effect on the team when it comes to crunch games. When, you know, if you look at the team and we look at our success rate on must-win games, then could that be in the playoff games, your cup games, our success rate is not very good. And you're up against teams with very, very strong cultures like Sheffield Steelers, Nottingham Panthers, who have got a bit of a bedrock there. They've had coaches there for a long time. They've had fan bases even in place. So I think there what those teams have gone through is they were battling to get their culture together, to get a style of play together, to pull these teams together, what they mean to the fans, how to play in that rink. And of course, when it comes to crunch time, you know, you lose out. So we do maybe think about what could have happened if we could have given these guys a bit more time. And it's difficult, and that's something the club's obviously still battling with at the moment. But I don't know how like Sammy feels about that. If you think that's something where you would love to have seen a few of these guys with a few more years in the Brayhead, in the Glasgow Clan setup, to see what they could have done with their feet under the table, rather than just one season, you know, going hammer and tong and doing the best you can for 1 year.
Yeah, I think so. And I think maybe to some degree that's one of the things that hurts the Elite League, being a little lower down the pyramid when it comes to obviously the level across Europe and also in the States. I think you're always going to, you know, when you unearth these gems, you're always at risk of losing them, and they're going to move on to bigger and better things. And, you know, it's understandable with it being such a short career that, you know, when these guys get the opportunity, they've got to take it while it's there. I think the point you touch on with culture is it's vastly underrated. I think it's something that, especially the last year, I've learned it's something that you can't rush, and you can't just throw money at it and buy it in. You've got to build this culture over years and years. And I think when you look at the teams that have the most success, they're the ones that kind of manage to keep that core together, whether it's British guys or it's maybe some Brits and some of the imports that kind of stick around a little bit longer. I think when you have these teams that have been through those shared experiences, and, you know, they win and lose together, and obviously they learn together, it's something that shows, especially in those kind of one-off, those big games, you know, in the playoff aggregate system. Obviously, there's not much room to manoeuvre. If you have one bad game, your season could be over there. So I think the teams that tend to do well are the ones that have been through that as a group together, and they kind of grow and learn. And, you know, sooner or later, they're going to find that success, and they're going to find that way to win those big games.
We've definitely struggled with imports and getting the certain things that guys... You've got like a list of things you basically have to say to brand new imports in the league. And one of the main ones, I remember talking with Tyson Wilson a few years ago, and I was like, you know, is the big ice such a big difference to you when he comes in? He went, oh yeah. He says, like, guys are coming at you at a completely different speed. That takes you 2 weeks. Because you're like, okay, I've got him. Oh, he's behind you, and he's cut inside, and he's got a goal, and the goalie's not expecting him to come in. Key things like that, aggregate scoring, you know, like a little list of things you almost have to go through. So I do think you're right. I do think the key to culture is probably your British guys, the guys who are here and part of that base, who can talk to people and let them know. And I think sometimes we've maybe underestimated how important that is, how important those key guys are.
I think so, and I think a great example of it is if you look at all the success that the Steelers have had over the years, they've kept that British core together, and, you know, from all the things that you hear, they seem to really, the British guys are almost the ones that are leading by example there, and I think you need big personalities for that, and I think the more that the ratio skews towards imports, the bigger kind of British personalities you need to. And the personalities within the core, not just the British guys. I think, you know, to have that voice and you know, they had success there in Sheffield, and they managed to maintain it by really keeping that core together. And I think when you have the right guys leading, it's easy to follow them, and the success kind of comes from there.
I thought Kevin Bergen was in the background there, like he was last week when we had Bruce Richardson on. Bergen's not come over to Leeds, no. The next point I had was simply two words, and I'm keen to know what it was like to play with this guy, Drew Miller. What was it like to play with a man who at the time came over during the middle of an NHL lockdown? The quality that he had, we all saw it on the ice. But from a locker room perspective, Sammy, what was it like playing with Drew?
Yeah, it was definitely, again, one of the high points, I think, of my time there personally. What struck me most about him is just what a normal guy he was, you know, off the ice. He's the kind of, I mean, you wouldn't look twice at him. I think he was about 180 pounds soaking wet. And he was just such a humble, down-to-earth guy, you know, to just fit in from day one, really, really one of the guys in the locker room immediately. And then you get him out on the ice, and it was, I mean, the big thing that stuck out to me was you'd have guys like Guy Lapine taking runs at him and just bouncing right off him. And you look at him and think there's nothing to him, but he was that good of a skater and he was that strong on his skates that was one thing. It was kind of the first time I'd seen that, and it really helped set him apart. And just the little intangibles to his game as well, you know, you'd never be caught on the wrong side of the puck defensively. Little things like getting pucks out on the wall. He was the best I'd ever seen at kind of those little areas. And I think him focusing on that is probably what got him such a long career in the NHL. And I remember his first practice he came on and the first drill we were just doing, just a full ice horseshoe drill, just dead simple, kind of a warm-up. And it ended up where the lines were that I was the one making the cross-ice pass to him. And I think the first three or four, I threw it right in his feet. And I was thinking, this guy's going to get on the plane and go home. But he just but I think it was probably just a case of nerves. And obviously, yeah, he's another guy who, you know, I think a lot of the guys who played that year have kept in touch and every now and again just see how he's doing. And yeah, he fit in so well. He was just, from day one, he was almost part of the furniture. And, you know, himself and his wife, they loved their time here. They would go off travelling around Scotland and seeing all the sights and then be back on the Wednesday for training. And yeah, he was definitely up there with, I wouldn't say the most skilled, but I think the most well-rounded players that I've seen in the flesh.
I mean, my recollections of him from a media point of view, an absolute delight to deal with. Kevin, let's hear your recollections of Drew Miller and the kind of guy he was, given the background he was coming from.
I'm really pleased to hear what, you know, Sammy was saying from a much more of an insider's point of view, because it very much echoes the impression that I had. And, you know, you never know what you're going to get, I guess, when a guy from that level comes in, especially a guy who's still at that level. It's very unusual for us to get somebody fresh out of the NHL. And he had absolutely no, you know, sort of hierarchy about him. He was very humble. He wasn't demanding. He fitted in as if he was of that level. But clearly when he was on the ice, he looked like a thoroughbred, you know, in terms of his skating and his awareness and his passing and his penalty killing. You could tell he was a class act, but he never tried to be a superstar. He tried to play the team role as well as, you know, having an extraordinary skill set. But he never tried to be the big I am. And he was never the big NHL star among a bunch of, you know, lower league players. He very much tried to fit in with the team ethic, and absolute pleasure to have him at the club and to have him around the place.
Definitely was. Right, we're starting to run out of time, so we'll get two or three more questions in before we call it a day there, Sam. A question from one of the fans, Billy McPhillamy, if I pronounced that right. If you could go back and change one thing about your time with the Clan, what would it be?
It's a tough one. I think on a personal level, I think after I did move on and moved down to Telford there, I definitely grew as a player, I feel, and whether that was maybe be given a bigger role or obviously the level not being as high, I definitely felt a lot more comfortable with the offensive side of the game, and maybe that was something that I maybe could have developed a little better while I was there. I think I kind of fell into a role there, which was, you know, it was a limit your mistakes and get the puck in, get the puck out kind of role, and probably didn't suit my game as well as it could have. And maybe if I could have kind of developed that offensive side a little bit earlier, I could have maybe seen a little bit more success up there rather than moving on and finding that success elsewhere.
And Billy also asked, I don't know if it was a supplemental question or a completely different question, but what does it feel like to be a fan favourite at the Clan? I remember that Matt's testimonial back in February, you get a huge welcome back as well. What is that like to still be that popular these years on?
I don't know about a fan favourite. As Jerry said earlier, I think, you know, the main thing that the fans want to see for me is, you know, that 100% commitment. And for me, I think that's... It's not a difficult thing to provide. I think, you know, that for me, that's the minimum that you should be providing, is that you're given 100% and you're fully committed to the cause. So yeah, it's obviously it's a great feeling to be fondly remembered up there, and And, you know, it was great to get back and see everyone there in February for Matt's testimonial. And it definitely brought back some good memories. And to be able to, you know, come back with my fiance, who we were together for part of my time up there. So she would be kind of up and down from Newcastle a bit coming to games. So for her to get back and see some of the familiar sights, like we all went down to Ashton Lane the night before where we'd spent some great times and had some great memories. So, yeah, it's great to be fondly remembered like that. And obviously that's something you always kind of strive for as a sportsman.
And Jerry, just going back to Matt's testimonial, it's so good that Sammy, who's relatively local in terms of the fact he lives on the island, you know, he's revered so much in the same way guys like Jordan Krstanovic and Matt Keith and all that are still very much loved as well. That's always great to see, I think.
Yeah, you know, it comes up so much, doesn't it, when we're doing these clan chats. I think we've mentioned Woody's testimony almost every single one that we've done, and it just shows you, it goes back to, again, to that kind of culture creation.
He's not even here.
I know. We're talking about him behind his back. I think that goes to that culture creation. And, you know, I think what's so lovely about our club is it does feel like a club now. It really is a club. And the players that have been here, like, we really don't want to ever let them go. You know, you're like, you're still a part of the club. If you've played for the club, especially if you put everything into it and people appreciate that, it doesn't get forgotten, and we're determined. And that testimonial, I think, was a celebration of what Woody's achieved, but what we've achieved as a club. And certainly Sammy and Jordan Krstanovic and Ash Goldie and Matt Keith and Stefan Meyer and all those guys, Alex Levitt. We should mention Alex Levitt because he feels like he never does get mentioned.
Yeah, he gets annoyed. They're annoyed.
Yeah,
that's one guy which I've played with. I met him briefly at Hayes. He's quite the character, isn't he?
Yeah, you missed out that season. Yeah. But no, I think that's a big part of it. You know, like we've had, you never really, I think that's what everyone wants. You feel like you never really leave. I hope you feel like you're always a Clansman, Sammy, because that's certainly the case.
Thanks, man. You definitely get that, the impression that it's a real family vibe up there. And again, harking back to the kind of culture thing, as you mentioned, it's something that comes naturally. And I think it's not just the players or just the coach or just the owner's responsibility. I think that the fans play a huge part in that as well. And, you know, the fans up there are second to none. I think when you see the way that they follow the team in such high numbers, and even the online presence that they've got, there's a massive hunger for the sport up there. And, you know, it's great to have got that 10-year mark now. And obviously, here's to the next 10.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, just quickly, Sam, before we finish up, I just want to ask quickly about Leeds Chiefs. You're recruiting a team, as we know. The Elite League's not happening this year. There's talk of starting a new year. We referenced the sort of governmental guidelines that we've been hit with in the last 24 hours or so. How is preparations for a new season going for you so far?
Yeah, it's a really difficult time, I think, for the sport as a whole. I think, you know, we're doing as best we can here with preparation. You know, there's a lot of hard work going into it, aiming for that January start. And I think after yesterday's announcement, it probably is a little less likely now than it was before that announcement. But again, all we can do is prepare until we hear different for that January start. And we've got a really exciting roster lined up. So, you know, we're desperate to get out there. We're desperate to get started. But obviously, there's bigger things going on in the world right now. And unfortunately, hockey's having to take a bit of a back seat. And you know, it's understandable because it's a matter of life and death, really. So you understand that, you know, our sport maybe has to suffer a little bit while we get this sorted out. And, you know, it is what it is, really, and what will be. But, you know, when we do finally get the green light, I think we're going to see our club come back strong, and we're going to see the whole sport over the whole country come back strong too.
Let's hope so. Right, well, time to end it there, gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us. For you Clan fans out there, let's remind you, it's Saturday, 7 p.m. on the Clan YouTube channel. It's the Clan taking on the Fife Flyers in another road game. I think we're on quite an unbeaten run at the moment, so that's always one to get tuned in for. Cat House 50-50 tickets are on sale, as are Creation IP shirt off the back tickets. You could win yourself a white number 27 Lyndon Springer jersey. So get those through the official Clan raffle account. Still plenty going on, so stay with us, Clan fans. My thanks to Jerry. Thanks for coming on, as always.
Thanks, Robin. It's good chat with you, Sammy. Cheers, Kev.
You too. All the best.
Kevin, welcome. Hopefully you'll be back next week.
Yeah. Looking forward to it already, Craig.
Excellent. And Sam, thank you so much for your time this week. Great to have you on board.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Okay, thank you for watching Purple Army, and I'll see you soon for another Clan Chat online. In the meantime, have a great weekend, stay safe, and bye for now.